You are listening to the Cycling Podcast at the Giro d'Italia in association with Rafa, the fastest clothing in the world tour, the home of cycling with character. Ride and watch with Rafa in 2019 as they partner with EF Education First and Canyon SRAM. Today we are in L'Aquila.
Cozze, citere, cozze, cozze, vicine, non spigudeci ora, non spigudeci ora.
Good evening from L'Aquila, and we begin with a world first. Ciro, we're beginning with you. We've never had the Italian national anthem right after our theme tune, the Amara Terra, the Pugliese music before. And that means that you're on the podcast from the off, from the whistle tonight. We're in L'Aquila, no Lionel, he's in Watford. And Ciro, we've seen an exciting stage, haven't we?
Really, really, exactly, because the fight was started from the very beginning of this stage. I mean, we have to consider that the average of the first hour was almost 50k per hour. There was a big breakaway at the beginning with some dangerous guy for the overall, as Nieve, for example, or also Izagir, and so Bahrain Merida over Vincenzo Nibali closed on
Ciro,
this.
Ciro, you're telling the whole story of the stage. That's my job. I'm supposed to do the tale of the tapa. So
yeah, the main topic, the fact that, yeah, exactly, it's been really exciting, especially for the fight in the end. Valerio Conti was almost he tried to save the jersey. At the end, he was able to save the jersey.
So another big day for the Italians, but I understand you've got a, well, you haven't got so much work tonight, but it's a big day for the newspaper because the coach of Juventus has been sent packing.
Exactly, and in this case we are lucky because we are obliged to finish a little bit before, so it could be also a good thing for us.
But no beaches in sight, we're in the middle of the mountains. What do you think of Abruzzo, where we are today, at L'Aquila? I like it because, probably for the same reason that you hate it, because you really feel here as though you're in the middle of the mountains. It's kind of like, if regions of Italy were countries, Abruzzo would be the Switzerland of Italy.
I really can't say what I think about Switzerland. It's not possible because I think that sometimes also kids are listening to the podcast. So really, I can't speak about this. But about Abruzzo, I mean, it's really a nice region. Also, people are really friendly. The hospitality of these people is really one of the best of Italy. And so also today we saw a lot of public on the street. So it's really a good
and
scenario.
Food is very good. You never talk about food, Ciro. Is that because is it true that at home you have a chef? You have a personal chef?
Not really. I have several personal chefs, dear listeners, because I can assure you that I never cook by myself in my life. Never.
Right, on that bombshell, I think we should go to the tale of the tapa, the official one, not the one that Ciro kindly provided. So Ciro, wish me luck, the tale of the tapa, here goes. Today was the seventh stage of the Giro d'Italia. We were going from Vasto in the Abruzzo region to L'Aquila. The distance was 185 kilometers, the temperature was pathetic yet again, and the pace was very fast all day, 45 kilometers an hour for the complete stage to be precise. The winner was Peyo Bilbao, the Basque rider from the Astana team, who with 1.5 kilometers to go took off out of a breakaway group of five riders, which had previously contained 12. The other big beneficiary of the day was Davide Formolo of Bora Hansgrohe, whose presence in that escape had caused a few nervous moments back in the peloton earlier in the day. They eventually decided to let the group stay clear, but still on a tight leash. And Formolo's third place on the stage only ended up gaining him a minute on the general classification contenders in the main bunch. There was indeed no significant change on the overall standings, with Valerio Conti still 1 minute 32 seconds up on Rojas of Movistar and 5 minutes and 24 seconds ahead of what most consider to be the virtual leader of the Giro, Primoz Roglic. Roglic's teammate Lawrence De Plus was one of two notable withdrawals today, the other being Fernando Gaviria, the winner of the Stage 2 Orbetello, who quit citing knee pain. So, Ciro, that was the story of the stage. A good one for the Italians, a good one for Davide Formolo. I was quite surprised, I don't know about you, that he was allowed to get away. I know Bahrain Merida didn't let him get too far down the road, but, you know, he got a gap of sort of 6 or 7 minutes and looked pretty dangerous at one point.
Yes, exactly. But I think that Formolo can do good things in this Giro. We have to remember that already twice he finished the overall in the first 10th position. He arrived in the Giro with really good legs after his second place in Liège-Bastogne-Liège. Certainly in his team there is also Rafał Majka, but in my opinion he's competitive. At the end today he was a little bit unlucky because I think he was the strongest in the breakaway, but Peyo Bilbao maybe was a little bit more smart in the final, so Davide lost the opportunity of a victory, of a stage victory, but I think that for him the stage victory will come soon.
I'll tell you what, Ciro, let's hear from him, but first we're going to hear from his teammate Jay McCarthy, who was also in the break today.
Yeah, I think if it was a different situation then I could have had a crack also, but I think having Davide there and Bilbao from Astana, it was an opportunity for both of our teams to try and give our guys a little bit of a head start before the mountains next week. Davide was super strong all day and maybe a little bit too strong in the last 5K. Maybe he could have been even higher in the stage, but I think it's good that he gained some seconds on the other GC contenders. And yeah, we have to see what happened from yesterday. If any of these guys that we let the breakaway go, if they can hold on during the mountains. But I think generally it's going to be the guys that were in the second group yesterday that'll be fighting out next week. And having Davide with those extra seconds, I think it'll be great.
Was it a pleasant surprise that they let you get as far down the road as they did? I mean, it looked as though Davide might doom the break.
Yeah, at the start I thought that could have been the case. They tried again, but I think the first 2 hours were so hard that I think the leaders' jersey and other teams were pretty cooked. You know, like when our group went, it was already after 2 hours of racing, and with my average watts, I could tell that it was a super hard day, and I was in some moves before, and that one finally they let go. But yeah, we had to work hard for them to finally let go. But yeah, I think that was just because the race was so hard beforehand.
GC is not so close so far. It's really open. Maybe lucky day for me. We'll see in the next day stage what's going to happen. I was thinking just for try for the stage today. That didn't come. We'll see in the next stage what's going on.
You've got legs to go for the GC though.
Yeah, we will see. Last week is really hard. It's still far away. Just to keep calm, we keep about recovery now, relaxing, and we will see what's going on in the stages.
So, Ciro, that was Formolo. He sounds as though he feels, you know, he's got good enough legs to stay up there in the general classification. But would you agree that his career in the last couple of years has maybe not developed at the rate that some would have imagined? Not in the major tours, anyway. I think his results in the last two Lièges have suggested that he's definitely got a future as a one-day race rider on hard courses.
Well, this is exactly the point, Daniel, because in Italy there is a big discussion about this in the last 2 years, because Davide himself is convinced that he's a rider for Grand Tour. But we are a little bit skeptical about this, especially because he's not really strong in time trial, and in our opinion is more a rider for classics as Liège-Bastogne-Liège, for one-day races. We remember that 5 years ago he was very young when he arrived second at the Italian National Championships, immediately behind Vincenzo Nibali. So also sometimes we spoke to him and we tried to convince him, Davide, you have to focus on one-day races. And he said, no, I will capable to be also a rider for Grand Tour.
Ciro, this morning or yesterday we were in Puglia. His coach, Formolo's coach, is from Puglia, isn't he? Leonardo Piepoli.
Yes.
Still? Is he still Formolo's coach?
Exactly, yes. He's really convinced about the possibility of Davide Formolo. We have to consider that Piepoli is considered really a good coach. He has some Italian riders that are really strong. For example, imagine Alberto Bettiol, the king of Tour of Flanders. Also, he's coached by Leonardo Piepoli. And also, his riders really love him. Imagine that when Bettiol came to Gazette after his victory of Flanders, he spoke a lot about Leonardo Piepoli, and he called him, he said that he calls him a stalker, because in the sense that certainly he calls his rider a lot of times every day, because he wants always to be really informed about their performance, about what they do. And so Leonardo is really convinced about the future of Davide Formula. We have to remember that he's still only 26.
Talking about stalkers and shadows, I saw you with your arm around Vincenzo Nibali at the finish, and you were whispering away in his ear, as you usually are after a stage finish. What was he saying?
The main thing that he worked with his Bahrain Meridia at the beginning of the stage, because he was convinced that the first breakaway could have been very dangerous for the overall, and so for this reason his team worked. But we have to be careful, because in this Giro, Astana as a team seems very strong, also Mitchelton. Bahrain Merida so far a little bit less, also because some riders, as Damiano Caruso, has some physical problems. So it's important for the possibility of victories of the Shark that all his teammates will recover for the second one, and especially for the third week.
Ciro, I'm going to ask you one last thing about Valerio Conti. First, we're going to hear from Machin Fernandez. Who is the, is he team manager now at UAE? A talent scout extraordinaire, and was at Quickstep until last year.
Yes, exactly. Well, now the team manager maybe is more Mauro Gianetti, but Machin works a lot with young riders. He's really a key man for the team.
I spoke to him this morning.
You may say he hasn't lived up to expectations yet, but it depends whose expectations you're talking about. He's a good rider. He might not be a champion who wins every race, but we know here that he's a talent, that he has big qualities, and he's also a very good person. His generosity is a strength and a weakness. When there's a teammate he can help to win, he won't hesitate. He showed that 2 days ago when he was working for Ulissi, on a day when Valerio could also have won. So yes, he's a great guy, an exceptional teammate, and now we have to defend this pink jersey. He's a rider with big physiological capabilities, the engine of a top rider. He showed when he was an amateur that he knew how to win races. He's quick, he can climb, he can time trial. Our motto now is going to be Carpe Diem. We don't want to think about how far he can take the jersey. We're savouring the moment and thinking only of today. Tomorrow we'll think about tomorrow, and so on and so on. We can't sell the bear skin before we've killed the beast.
So, Ciro, that was Machin talking about Valerio Conti. Yesterday we decided that his nickname for the moment was going to be Contador. You've had 24 hours. You must have come up with something else in the last 24 hours.
Yes, I promise you that I will come with another nickname. I can anticipate you that could be something to an animal.
The Cycling Podcast at the Giro d'Italia is supported by Science in Sport. Science in Sport, fueled by science.
Thanks to our sponsors, Science in Sport. You can get 25% off all Science in Sport products on scienceinsport.com, and if you use the discount code of SISCP25, so the letters all in capitals, SISCP25, you will get 25% discount on all their fantastic products. I'm joined by another guest. We've gone to a different part of Europe. Still no Lionel, so I have recruited Leon de Court from Pro Cycling Netherlands, The Telegraph in Netherlands, the Netherlands best paper, Leon? Biggest paper?
Of course. Biggest, the best.
Of course. You're definitely one of the Netherlands' best cycling journalists, aren't you?
I won't say that, but close to.
How many Tours de France have you done?
26.
26?
26.
You got the medal? You get the medal after 20?
I did get it after 22 because they had forgotten me.
Easily
like
done.
In France.
Easily done. And how many Giri?
This is my third Giro in a row, and before I did some parts of the Giro in the past.
Enjoying it?
Yeah.
More fun than the Tour, isn't it?
Yeah, but we miss Tom Dumoulin, of course.
But you got Primoz Roglic.
Yeah, he's almost a Dutch here.
But bad day for Roglic. Lost Laurens de Ploes. Now, Leon, explain to me why I, or how come I and other journalists were going to Jumbo Visma for, well, we've been going there for 2 or 3 days saying, is Laurens de Ploos ill? And they've been saying no every time. And hey presto, today he pulled out.
Yeah, it's very strange to me. The way Laurens de Ploos became sick, that was normal, I think. You can always be sick. But then, day after day, they stay saying, the team stay saying, no, not a problem, not a problem, there is no problem, he's not sick, he's not sick. And then we heard the rumors, we got the rumors from colleagues, and then Laurens de Ploos was gone. It's a stupid thing.
But it's strategic, no. I mean, it's understandable in the sense that they don't want to reveal their weakness to rivals. But I think everyone had noticed. I mean, I spoke to Directeur Sportif 3 or 4 days ago, and they all knew.
Yeah, of course. Everybody, every rider is talking to each other in the day, during the ride. They all know their secrets. So everybody knew that Laurens de Ploos was ill, was sick, was not able to continue this race.
And it puts them in a bad spot, doesn't it? Because they don't have an awful lot of backup. In, certainly in the mountains, they got, who have they got? They got Tolhoek.
Tolhoek, Sepp Kuss. I just spoke to Laurens at the bus, and he said he was happy to see that Anton Tolhoek and Sepp Kuss at the moment seems quite good in shape, and they will do the work for him, he said. But I don't believe that, because Laurens de Ploos is 2 levels higher.
And this leaves, as I said, it leaves Roglic in a difficult position. But, you know, he looks so strong so far in the race. How much is he going to need those guys?
I'm not sure if he really needs the guys of the team, because I've looked at the starting list and I see all the teams. There's only one team, to my opinion, Astana, who has quite good riders, and they can provide from each other. But for the rest, I don't see too many riders, top riders, who have enough power around them to make the opponents make it harder.
Hey, Leon, I've got a story for you. I don't know if you've heard this. It's a rumor that's been going around for a few days. Primoz Roglic used to be a ski jumper. That's what I heard today. Have you ever heard that before?
Is that a rumor? I think it's
I think
rumor.
It might be true.
Actually, yeah. I've been with Primoz at his hometown last year in June to see where he comes from, what his background is. And we spoke for at least an hour at the top of a jumping hill. And that time he was quite open. Because if you meet Primoz Roglic during the race or in a training camp, he's shy, he won't say anything. But that day, because of the sun, I think, in his own
region.
That
was in June, was it?
It was in June. Just before
last year's Tour de France, yeah.
Yeah, just before the start of the Tour of Slovenia, which he also won. But it was a very pleasant day, I have to admit. He was friendly, he was rather outspoken for Primoz Roglic, and He told a lot, and we went to his old primary school, and he showed everything, and he had time for us. And normally, Primoz Roglic wants to say, I'm happy about the race, I'm happy about my teammates, and tomorrow is a new day.
and Leon, just going back in to when Jumbo-Visma, or what was then, what were they called then?
Belkin.
Well, when they took on Roglic,
Lotto Jumbo,
a couple of years ago. Just remind us, how did they happen upon him? Why did he end up at that team and not another team?
It's all done by Frans Maassen. Frans Maassen was the former junior coach of Rabobank, and he often worked together with a Slovenian guy. I don't remember his name now, but he knew Primoz, and he ranked him and said, Frans, I've got someone special for you, and you've got to sign him. And Frans said, okay, let's do it. They got into contact with Primoz's agent, and it was quickly done.
And do you think that they knew pretty quickly that they had something special on their hands?
I think so, because Marijn Zeeman, one of the key members of the Team Lotto Jumbo and now Jumbo-Visma, he did some extra tests with Roglic, and the tests proved that it was an amazing talent.
And do you think now that they're going to, well, I mean, it's a team with a kind of long-term plan that they want to be the best team in the world. Do you think that their future and Roglic's future are on sort of parallel paths?
I think so, yeah. I think so. Roglic, he's a good guy. I think it's a good guy. And the guy fits well in the team. He feels it's comfortable with the other guys. He already talks quite good Dutch.
Oh yeah?
Yeah, yeah, yeah. But
how many riders at Rabobank that aren't Dutch speak good Dutch? I remember George Bennett spoke decent Dutch, didn't he? He spoke a few words.
What do you think of Paul Martens? He better speak Dutch than me.
Oh,
he's
yeah,
a German.
To be fair, yeah.
No, but
The language of the team now is English, isn't it?
Yeah, I think so. Yeah. Yeah, because of Sepp Kuss, all those guys in the team. Yeah, English, Dutch.
Speaking of Dutch and Dutch men, Tom Dumoulin's home. You didn't think he should go to the Giro in the first place, did you? And you tried to convince him at the start of the year not to go to the Giro, and he didn't listen to you. Imagine that. Yeah, incredible.
It's really incredible, because I always have good advice for everybody. And I really said to Tom, you better focus on the Tour de France, because you've won the Giro, okay. The parcours of the Giro suits you better, but if you have won the Giro, you're not so motivated anymore as you are for the Tour de France, because you want that tour on your palmarès. So you have to go to that Grand Tour. And if you see the team of Sunweb, which is here, and the team which is supposed to be in the Tour de France, then you can say that's the A team, and this here was the B team. So for me, it did make sense that Tom Dumoulin was here in the Giro just to prepare for the Tour de France.
Do you think he's going to win the Tour now?
That's really hard to say, because we have...
But speculation. We don't like speculation on this podcast, but, you know, I'm asking you to speculate. Come
yeah,
on.
Yeah, sure. Chris Froome is there, and he wants to have his fifth Tour de France. A certain Egan Bernal will show up, and we have seen quite good things from that guy.
Richard Moore, who you know, my colleague, thinks that Egan Bernal faked his injury. That he wasn't injured with a broken collarbone.
Oh, like Tyler Hamilton did with his shoulder? I don't think so.
No,
I don't think so. That's a rumor, like the rumor of Astana of yesterday.
I told you that rumor, didn't I? Yeah. And we're talking about riders getting ill and Laurens de Plus. I was speaking to some guys at Astana this morning about that. I don't know exactly the English word that they're using, but this kind of purification team that's going onto the bus every day. And yesterday they were mistaken for police raiding the bus for drugs. So I understand they go onto the bus every day. There are a couple of them. Yesterday there were a few more because they had a visit from some experts at the University of Bari. They're going to have more people from another university on in the next few days. Journalists saw so many of these guys in fumigation suits and with masks on and so forth going onto the bus that they
chemical
assumed. that they assumed that there was either some kind of a chemical bomb had been let off in the Astana bus, or it was a drugs raid, and it was nothing of the sort. But I understand a few teams have been offered this service. I think by the same company that is helping Astana out, and I think it costs, so the going rate is about €1,000 a day or £1,000 a day, around about there. It's pretty much the same these days. But I think some teams have hesitated because there is this issue of whether being exposed to germs is actually a good thing. And it actually helps people to, you know, develop a more robust immune system. I was speaking to Marco Pinotti of CCC this morning, and he was talking about how, you know, in his opinion, based on what he's observed, one of the places or one of the circumstances in which riders are most likely to get ill is on aeroplanes, which you can do nothing about.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. But what do you want me to say?
Well, what's your opinion?
It's a long story.
What's your opinion?
My opinion is every team which believes in this kind of things, why not? Why shouldn't they use it? But I don't know. I don't know if it really helps. And it's really a lot of money, eh? Indeed.
Well, 1,000. I don't think Astana are paying that much because I think...
Maybe it's sponsored.
Because they're sponsored.
Yeah.
But, yeah, interesting. Anyway, Leon, thanks very much. Where are you off to tonight?
Half an hour driving from here in La Quilla.
La Quilla. God, your pronunciation is worse than Richard and Lionel. Really, Lionel, come back. La Quilla.
La Quilla.
La Quilla.
La Quilla.
And you're traveling solo on the Giro, aren't you?
Yeah, I am.
And you ride your bike every day?
Not every day, but I try to do it. But this week, with all the long stages, the early starts...
And you wrote a book, in fact, a couple of years ago, about riding your bike every single day. Having not really ridden much at all before that, in the period just before that.
No, that's correct.
And why did you do it?
I want to become a little bit more healthier. I lost 30 Ks who are back at this moment.
All of them?
Not all, 29. But okay, I felt healthier and I really liked it, and that's therefore I was still riding my bike and I still like it every day, if I'm going, if I have the time.
The fastest clothing in the World Tour, the home of cycling with character. Ride and watch with Rafa in 2019 as they partner with EF Education First and Canyons RAM.
I've tried a number of the different shorts, whether it's the flyweight summer shorts or the standard shorts or the bib tights, and they've been great. Hi, my name is Joe Dombrowski, and we are talking on the Cycling Podcast. I was back home in Virginia until mid-January and was wearing the bib tights. So it's basically about as like miserable as it could be for training, but they were great. And honestly, something like that can make the difference in terms of whether you're able to ride or not. We've gotten through a couple races now and been testing all the different variations of the new Rafa bib shorts, and I think they're the best bib shorts in the world.
We're continuing our world tour here in L'Aquila. We've already had Ciro via Naples. We've had Leon de Cor via, I can't remember where Leon comes from, somewhere south of, it's near a place called Delft, I think, in the Netherlands. And next stop, is it Colorado or is it Leon?
It's Colorado. Colorado.
We've got Andy Hood from Velonews.
Yes.
Rival outlet, Velonews. Whisper it.
Yes. It's good to be here with you, Daniel. I mean, I was just... thinking coming over here, when I first met you, I think you're like a 19-year-old intern working for Mape.
Hoodie, I remember when I first met you, the briefing that I got about you were the American guy that slept in ditches, that couldn't afford hotel rooms, and you're still here.
That wasn't
how
too
many
far
years
off
on?
But I mean, I wasn't sleeping in ditches.
You didn't. I think in those first Tour de France's that I covered, you were writing for about 8 different outlets. I think you had pretty much the whole of the United States covered, didn't you?
Yeah, that was back in the day when freelancers used to get paid well. We used to get paid 3 with 2 zeros and a number in front of it per story. Now it's about a 1 and a 0 per story.
Well, Hoodie, I said we're in L'Aquila. This reminds me a bit of Leon in the sense that, you know, we're quite a long way south, but it really feels like a mountainous, well, it feels like a very cold place today, but I don't know if you noticed today how much snow there is up on the Apennines.
It was impressive.
Doesn't bode well for... the mountains in the second half of this race, the Alps and Dolomites, we're hearing all sorts of things about the Gavia probably being taken off the route. I would say probably at this stage, I mean, judging by and the pictures I've seen of the amount of snow up there. But even if the race had been going up the sort of Maiela National Park, which is the big national park, the big mountain range.
Grand Sasso.
Just south of L'Aquila, up to Blockhouse, for example, there would have been problems, wouldn't there?
Yeah, it's been the real talking point in this first week of this Giro, just how cold it is. I mean, here we are well south, and yesterday we were even south, almost near to Naples. And, it's really just been cold, everyone's been bundled up. I'm sitting here right now, I've got my stocking cap on, my puffy jacket. It's like, come on, man, this is like the Giro, especially this first week. It's supposed to be like short pants and T-shirts.
Well, it doesn't feel like it, does it, Hoodie? So we are in Abruzzo, we're in L'Aquila. Can you think of any riders from this region who are in the race, Hoodie? I'm testing your knowledge now.
Oh, man, Mr. Bardiani boy. On track now, yeah. They were pulling for him today to try to get the win on the home roads.
Another one whose team got a stage win today, remember? I'll give you a clue. Remember the famous break? You were probably here. The famous break in 2010, stage won by Evgeny Petrov. Richie Porte took the pink jersey. We thought they might even win the race. David Arroyo went soaring up the general classification. Yep. And he got quite close to winning the race. But this rider who I'm talking about from Abu Dhabi was in the break that day. And in fact, he finished the stage in second place.
Oh, man, come on, you're testing me.
Dario Cataldo. I spoke to him this morning.
Dario, 2010, the famous break de L'Aquila. You, I think two riders who are in this race were in that break then. What do you remember about that day?
A lot of water, a lot of cold. It was the start of the Giro more or less like this. A lot of rain every day. We are lucky that today is still pretty fresh, but not rainy like 2 days ago. So I think we will enjoy more than that day, 2010.
And we're in your home region. How special is it to ride in Abu Dhabi?
Very special, even because in 2010 was one year later after the earthquake in L'Aquila, and now are 10 years, so it's a special moment for that city. And I was training many times when I was younger in that place, so I feel it more even for that reason.
And when something like that happens, and it's happened a few times in Italy with earthquakes, it doesn't just get repaired and sorted out in a year, does it? I mean, the people of L'Aquila and Abruzzo, they're still living with the consequences.
But yeah, living with consequences, but L'Aquila is a city who is coming out in a very nice way. I've been there a few days ago, and I saw it really... renewed city, and will be very beautiful to see it how it was just after the earthquake, and now that is again is coming up more beautiful than before.
And just the last thing, Dario, it's almost been a perfect week for Superman. I mean, lost a little bit of time, but you got to be pretty happy.
Yeah, for sure, because it was a very tricky week, and we are trying to do the best to arrive with not any losing time during this day, so we are happy for the moment we have to arrive to the mountain like this.
So Hoodie, Cataldo, they're talking amongst other things about the legacy of the earthquake in L'Aquila. So that was 10 years ago, 6th of April I think it was. I was just reading up about that earlier. Do you know how many aftershocks there were of that earthquake? 19,800 earth tremors in the months that followed that earthquake.
We could see all the cranes here still building the buildings 10 years
fewer
after.
Fewer than last time we came here, which was a couple of years ago. But yeah, you're right. I think 9,000 people or around that number are still in kind of temporary housing. So, you know...
That's Italy.
That's a bit harsh. But Astana are certainly building a very impressive season, aren't they?
Oh, yeah, another spectacular performance by that team. I mean, I think they're close to being tied with Quickstep on the wins per season. And the remarkable thing about that statistic is, you know, they don't even have a sprinter. These are all wins that are coming out of stage races, one-day races. You know, Fuglsang got the huge win at Liège. I mean, they've been on a tear this year. And for them to win today, and they had four Movistars in that break, it just shows you how strong that team is right now.
Yeah, and if you speak to the management of that team, people like Beppe Martinelli, who's the multi-Giro winning director sportif, you know, they talk about how the recruitment was very much focused this year on short stage races and stage race riders, guys like Peyo Bilbao, and they thought that was a gap in the roster, and it was the chance as well to win a lot of races early in the season, because there are an awful lot of short stage races early in the season. But they also... this is what they say, they kind of moved their preparation forward a month, and they wanted to carry a lot of momentum into the early part of the season. We thought that it might run out, but it hasn't done that.
Well, you know, sometimes those little tweaks to preparation and, you know, little things like even just scheduling can really make a difference in performance. You know, like a guy like Fuglsang, he's never really even, you know, put a lot of focus on the one days. And he put it, incorporated those into his calendar this year and put a big focus on that. And man, he had, you know, I think he had probably the best spring behind guys, you know, Vanderpool and Alaphilippe. I mean, Fuglsang was really right there consistently in those podiums. And then to get that win in Liège, I mean, how huge was that?
What about Superman?
Yeah, Superman.
We were both there at the bus tonight. He doesn't say a lot, does he, to the Colombian journalists? You would think he would have this great rapport with them. But he's kind of the opposite. And you see this with Chavez as well. They seem to be much more kindly disposed to the non-Colombian journalists.
Yeah, it's interesting. I mean, Chavito, everyone loves Chavito. And Lopez, you know, I've talked to him a few times. He's kind of a quiet guy. He's not too exuberant when he speaks to the media, but he always has a few interesting things to say. I think, you know, right now they're really sitting in a good position. I think the big challenge for him is going to be that time trial on Sunday. If he can get through that, limiting his damage and losses to guys like Roglic, I mean, they'd be sitting in prime position going into the mountains.
Well, especially when you consider the collective strength, really, because De Ploes has gone today from Jumbo-Visma, so they're definitely going to be weakened in the mountains. And you know, you could say it was already quite a weak team. Barre Merida have lost Corrin. Caruso has been sick. I think he probably sat up today, lost a whole load of time again. They've also got one of their mountain domestiques, he's a guy, Andre Garozio, who turned pro at the start of the year, and they've kind of thrown him in there, keeping their fingers crossed that he's going to go well. So, you know, in terms of teams, it's only really Mitchelton that look anything like as strong as Astana, but they've got a very different emphasis from Astana, because Mitchelton always pick teams that are weighted more towards the first half of stage races and the flat stages, don't they?
Yeah, that's right. You have, and they picked up Brent Bookwalter. You got Jack Bauer out there in the flats, kind of keeping Simon Yates safe in these kind of long. I mean, we have these long stages, 200 plus. I think this is the fourth or even fifth day of a 200 long plus kilometer stage, one tomorrow as well. Just, you know, really taking the toll on the peloton. So I think that you saw Mitchelton Scott, you know, they want to just get Simon Yates into the mountains. They're very, very confident that once he's in the steep climbs, that he can just drop everybody.
Hoodie, talking of teams and tactics and collective strength, what about Tony Savio?
Oh, man.
What about Androni Sidermec? In fact, before we discuss that, we're going to hear from Gianni. We're going to have our traditional, our almost daily now update from Gianni. Today he's going to be looking back at the glorious victory for Fausto Masnada yesterday. And he's going to be telling us a bit more about what the formation was yesterday. So Gianni, yesterday you gave me the formation. You said 2-4-2. It worked, didn't it?
Yes, there was also bomber Francesco Gavazzi, but not only Francesco. Francesco was in the second breakaway. In the first breakaway, Fausto Masnada. Francesco in the second breakaway, and fortunately, Fausto Masnada in the third breakaway. So yesterday, wonderful day.
And Gianni,
for a professional team, win in one big tour is wonderful, because many years ago, not a winner in professional team, because is too much different the budget between World Tour and professional team. And so is normal that the big riders are all in World Tour. So I continue discovering new talent.
And Gianni, the modulo on the road was 2-4-2. What was the modulo of the bottles of Prosecco in the evening? Also 2-4-2, because I know sometimes you like a small glass of Prosecco.
Prosecco was 8 altogether.
So Hoodie, Masnada, one of the... Well, there haven't been that many kind of revelations. There haven't been many protagonists of this Giro yet, but he's certainly probably the first big revelation. I mean, I know he had form coming into this race, but word on the street is he's already signed for CCC.
Yeah, that's right. That's kind of it's almost the farm team, really, for the World Tour with Johnny Savio. You know, he doesn't have the budget, but he has the eye for the talent, and he gets these guys, gives them opportunities to win. You know, they're not racing for the GC, so a stage win for him is huge. I think it's his first one I saw in 7 years. And Savio is such a presence in the peloton. In fact, you know, Daniel, you were kind of the guy who really introduced him really to the English-speaking world. Because I remember when I first came onto the scene, you were always like, oh, look at Johnny Savio. He's a cool guy. He's, you know, he's so stylish.
And I,
But honestly, he was kind of, we were talking about this in the car today, how, I don't know if it, you know, the right word is, he was like kind of looked, you know, the snobs within the Italian elite and the Peloton kind of looked down on Johnny. And, you know, I think he's getting the kind of respect he deserves because of some of the things, I think, in part, what you guys have done with him.
Well, he's getting some respect from people whose opinions kind of are generally valued. And I think people admire his ability to spot talent or certainly pick up talent that's been pre-spotted by someone else. And he's on this great run the last few years, you know, with Bernal Sosa, Masnada.
We can't forget Rujano.
Rujano might still have a glorious career. He's probably still only about 26 years old. But, you know, Catania was in the break today. That was, that is one of Gianni's two GC riders. And, you know, Masnada, it wouldn't shock me if he finished in the top 10 overall. I mean, he's a very sort of serious guy. I mean, yesterday he definitely wasn't getting carried away. He seemed like his eye was still on the bigger prize of finishing in the top 10 overall. And I think he's going to be a guy who will be a factor in World Tour races for a few years. But Hoodie, is the end of the first week. Just sort of big takeaways for you so far, apart from the weather.
Yeah, I mean, it's the first week of any Grand Tour is about avoiding those disaster crashes like Tom Dumoulin had. I mean, it's just the luck of the draw, right? I mean, someone crashes in front of him, he lands on a chain ring, and his Giro is over before it even started. And that's what everyone is just, that tension is there. I was talking to Joe Dombrowski today. He said, you know, once they get into that second time trial, into that rest day, finally in the mountains, that tension, you know, evaporates as the peloton splits up in these big climbs and the GC is more settled. But that's what it's been all about, really, in this Giro. And this is kind of an old school Giro, isn't it? You know, it's all about, everything's backloaded. So it's like right now everyone's just trying to avoid trouble, stay healthy. You know, the pollen's been knocked down because of the rain. It helps a lot of people. So, I mean, I know Michael Woods, EF Education First, did not come back to this year's Giro in part because he has major pollen issues. And I know there's been other riders throughout, you know, their careers. It just, you come to Italy in May, everything's in bloom. I went for a little bike ride this morning in the late start, and I was just sucking in the pollen from all the flowers. Beautiful, but man, not good if you have pollen problems.
Cody, another takeaway from this week. Final thing. Pascal Ackermann does not like being asked about Brasio.
Yeah, I was kind of surprised by that. You know, he's a young guy. Maybe he's never been asked about doping before. You know, those were kind of part and parcel back in the dark old days when me and you were around, you know, 10 years ago or so. You know, those questions don't come up as often anymore, but I think it was a relevant question. You know, it's a story that's breaking. It's kind of one of the stories been looming out there really for the last couple of weeks and months. We just don't know really what's going on there. But, you know, it's a story that's kind of bubbling behind the scenes, right? And we don't know exactly what's happening there. It sounds like the UCI is cooperating with the German and Austrian authorities that are behind this, you know, getting some names from the past, but also some names from today. And that's what I think that makes that question more pertinent. It's like, it's not about these bad old days and the bad old guys. It's about what's, you know, it's happening today. We've seen guys like Priedler and some of these other guys that came up the other day on the UCI provisional list. So I was kind of surprised by his reaction, but at the same time, it was that rainy, cold day. They'd been out on the bike all day, so maybe he wasn't expecting that question. They said coming out of the press conference, three questions. You know, I shot my hand up, asked the question. He didn't want to ask it. And, you know, to be honest, I haven't actually found Packer Ackermann and, you know, just chatted to him about that question and see if he'd give me another answer under more calm circumstances. I hope to do that in the next couple of days.
Well, Hoodie, on that note, we're going to wrap up for the evening. Where are you off to tonight?
We are back down on the coast. We, you know, it's been a lot of driving so far in this Giro, eh? It's like, doesn't look like much on paper, but we've been pulling these 10, 12-hour, 13-hour days. But I guess the good part, Daniel, is we're knocking out these big distances in this first half, and maybe we'll get these a little bit shorter. You know, Welta stages, that's what I like. Doesn't start till 2.
Lionel is still going to be in Watford tomorrow, so I'm still going to be on my own. Who knows, you might get invited back. I don't know if you're allowed to be invited back.
I'll read the small print of my contract.
Yeah, I think you should. But that's all for this evening from L'Aquila. Tomorrow,
we will be coming to you from Pesaro. Lionel had a lot of problems with the pronunciation of Pesaro. Do you have problems with that? You're a Spanish speaker, fluent Spanish speaker, but people who don't speak Italian generally have difficulties with the stress. Which syllables put the stress on?
That's right, and I think if you get it wrong, you really can put yourself in a mess sometimes.
Anyway, Hoodie, thank you very much, and maybe hasta mañana.
Hasta mañana.
Marriott Bonvoy is the official hotel partner of US soccer. Join Marriott Bonvoy today to get closer to the game with exclusive perks, unforgettable experiences, and benefits that go beyond the pitch. Spring Hill Suites, part of Marriott Bonvoy, offers complimentary hot breakfast and spacious all-suite accommodations, perfect for the whole team, with room for up to 6 guests. Make your next getaway a win. Learn more at springhillsuites.marriott.com.